Good Tuesday evening, everyone. Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio, the Double L Show. How's everybody doing tonight? Chat room's still checking in, so we'll let everybody refresh, hit play, and let's get this thing started. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Who all we got in the chat room so far? We got Mr. Andy Bukowski, Agent Joe. Let's go. Kevin, we got a guest. Guest, you can log in with your Facebook or Twitter account, or you can go make your own at Blog Talk Radio, and then you'll be able to interact in the chat room. Or maybe you're better off if you don't want to, because sometimes I don't know what goes on in the chat room. Arlie, Tommy V, Matt, and Yak Groupie. Thank you, everybody. Matt, I saw earlier you said you got power and internet back. That's great. Glad to hear that. I know everybody up there still got a lot of work ahead of them to get back to life as normal, that at least as normal as it can be for a while. So glad to hear it, buddy. Glad to hear you're back up and running. Jay was just on the phone with Chris and I, and he said he's still in the progress of getting his house back together. Got it. Mostly all the damaged stuff torn out, and now just waiting to go forward and get his house put back together. So if anybody's listening to us tonight or not in the chat room, when you're still dealing with the aftermath of Sandy, we wish you the best and hope everything gets worked out for you. Unfortunately, I see we have another storm coming our way. Not as severe as Sandy, but time for I think it's supposed to arrive here sometime tomorrow through Thursday and then kind of make its way up north towards the New Jersey, New York area. So not what everybody wanted to hear, especially up that way, I'm sure. But maybe for once the weathermen will be wrong, because, you know, they're always right, and this thing will blow out a little more. So probably not a good chance, but hopefully that'll be nice. So I'm hoping for it, because I had to cancel my clients I had the weekend of Sandy, and now if it comes through and stays hard here, I'm going to have to cancel the same group again. So maybe those people, no, I don't want to say bad luck, I'm just joking. But anyway, we'll cover a couple quick things locally. Chris, what's going on with all the group down there? Everybody behaving so far?
So far, so good.
Yeah, very cool.
You know that ain't that bad.
Yeah, I know. They got to get warmed up a little bit. It's gotten cold outside, so they got to get kicking. So, but anyway,
we're missing,
we'll see what happens.
Tom and Joe, so we might be good tonight.
Nah, they're coming. We're just stumbling around. No Tom yet. They'll be here hopefully. But anyway, we got a good show for you guys tonight. Get your pen and paper out. We have a cold water expert, as I like to call him. Vic Sorensen will be with us here in a little bit. We're going to talk about everything you need to keep on fishing through the winter, especially here in Tidewater. You don't definitely have to hang up your rod and reel just because it's gotten cold. There's still a lot of fishing to be done, but you got to be smart about it. So if you got any questions, anything about cold weather, gear, clothing, anything, get them together. You're welcome to call in the show and ask Vic, or put your question in the chat room and we'll get it across to Vic. The phone number is area code 714-816-4727. So like I said, if you got a question, anything you want to share, give us a call. We'll try to help you out or listen to you. Like I said, if you got something you want to share, maybe you have an experience with cold weather that taught you a lesson, or using the proper gear and how it saved your life, so to speak. So we'll see where we go from there. But moving on here real quick locally, fishing report changed a little after the storm, and I kind of think I mentioned that last week. Things were going to get a little different, and it did around here. It took a little while. It's going to take a little while, I think, for some things to balance out. Some of the places I was catching fish before the storm went back to this weekend, and was very desolate. Water temperatures have dropped. Air temperatures have dropped. So things are going to change. Slow down is the biggest key I can tell a lot of you right now, especially when it comes to the trout and stuff for a while. Slow down. Jay was asking before we came on the air about some selective trout lures and things to use tomorrow. I would definitely go with the slower baits now. Let's see, what would I suggest, Jay? What would I suggest you? Mirrodines would be great in this type of series. Slow sinking twitch baits like 17 MRs, things like that by Mirror Lure, even your jerk shad, use them on a lighter weight so they're suspending and sinking a little slower. make your presentation and your retrieve a little slower. As the water temperature drops, it slows them down. What else do I got? But I still hear that there's a lot of fish around. I mean, nothing. They haven't really left. They just slowed down. The river, of course, the river, as our guest who called in last week, Andy, likes to call it, is still doing great for trout, puppy drum, striped bass are in the river. The bridges and tunnels are holding stripers. Fog bites still on. I see Guy Kevin's in the chat room. I'm sure he's trying to get out there to do some fogging, but it's been blowing like crazy here. I mean, every day I look out on the bay here from the, where I'm working, and it's been pumping out there. So hopefully it'll lay down here soon once this nor'easter goes through, and we can get out there and do some of that. But, yeah, should still be good, but we want to make sure that everybody's prepared for the cold weather coming. So let's see. I got a fishing report, I believe, from Phil Rucker down in North Carolina, and I want to make sure we get to that. Phil sent us. Let's see. As many are rebuilding and returning to a sense of normalcy along the Outer Banks, he says. Inshore coastal fishing has quickly returned to where it was prior to Sandy. Excellent numbers of good-sized specks, flounders, as well as slot reds are still being caught along the Pamlico and coastal areas of North Carolina. And he's got one event here, the North Carolina Kayak Fishing Association Spot and Specks Tournament, Saturday the 10th at Fort Fisher, below Wilmington, North Carolina. All right, Phil, well, we appreciate that. Phil with Get Outdoors, Jack for Fish on most of the websites. You'll see them out there. Thank you, Phil. So North Carolina is getting back in shape, too, from the storm that came through, it looks like. Miss anything so far in the chat room, Chris?
No, not a darn thing.
The river. I see where Andy put it up. Yeah, the river. River's still doing good. All right. So, yeah, the temperatures are dropping. Said that at the top of the show, but just because the temperatures drop don't mean that we have to give up fishing around here. They're dropping everywhere, too, so even for our southern friends, you know, it's going to get colder out there, and you better start thinking about getting the gear together and getting yourself right before you get out there in the water and something bad happens and you're not prepared for it. But there's definitely a lot of good fishing left to be done this year besides for the trout and things that are going to be in the river, and should stay in Lynn Haven and Rudy and places like that till we get a huge drop in temperatures. One thing that's nice about it this time of year is you don't have to rush out and be on the water at 0:30 in the morning. Give the sun time to get up. Look for areas in the bottom that are darker and let the sun kind of warm those areas up, and that's where the fish will come. They'll stay deeper when it's colder because there's a constant water temperature below, but then they'll come up towards those sunny banks, and that's where they'll start feeding, and that's where you usually see the bait start to move too in those darker areas that have been warmed by the morning sun. Like I said, you don't have to be on the water at zero dark. You can kind of wait till the sun comes out to warm you up too, but the water temperatures are still cold and the air temperatures are still cool, so better dress accordingly. But that's why I thought it would be a good time now, before it gets really cold, to get everybody prepared and start thinking properly so you still have time for the big stripers show up. I know a lot of people are looking forward to that locally. We're going eeling. Concrete ships will be on fire. You'll be able to walk all the way around the concrete ships pretty soon and never get your feet wet. And kayak to kayak, you can just keep stepping across. So, but when that happens, you better be prepared. So I thought it would be a good night to have Vic on. Vic Sorensen, if everybody's not familiar with him, works at our local Appomattox River Company store. We did a live broadcast from his new location. It was new then. I guess it's still new to him. In Hampton, Virginia. So we'd like to welcome Vic. And you still with us, Vic? Did you run off yet?
Yeah, I'm still here, sitting in the background.
Still here? All right. Well, first off, thank you for giving up your Tuesday evening to help us out with this topic, Vic.
Thanks a lot, Martin. Thanks. I really appreciate you inviting me on. Just one other thing, you know, I work at the store at Appomattox River Company, but one of the reasons this topic is so important to me is that I also retired from the Coast Guard, so I spent a lot of time dealing with this type of stuff. So it's something I've got a lot of, personal interest in it also.
Well, good. Well, that's why we got you. I know you've always graciously in the past volunteered your time to the Tidewater Kayak Anglers Association, and we used to do the the Blue Nose Turtle classes that we used to do at the Willoughby Ramp. We didn't do it last year, but we had some fun doing those in the past.
I think they did do it, but you were in Florida, honey.
Oh. Yeah, it wasn't too cold down there except for the one day I went to the No Motor Zone. So Vic's always been gracious enough because besides for running a kayak fishing store, you also are a ACA paddle, what's the proper term, certified instructor?
I was an open water instructor with the for touring kayaks, but got really involved in the fishing program when they were first starting that up with the ACA. I'm not really sure what the latest is with that now. I think it may have fallen off a little bit. I'm sure there's some listeners that may know a lot more about that, but it kind of started dropping out of that program a little bit.
Okay,
I spent time doing instruction with coastal kayaking.
Very cool. Well, I got something here to read to everybody you sent along tonight before you gave me, and it makes a lot of sense, and I know there's a lot of people out there that probably haven't experienced this yet, but Vic's, the top of his line here was, there are those of us that have capsized, those that will, and those that don't paddle. The better prepared a paddler is, the better they'll survive the turtle, he puts in quotes. So that's right. It's not if it happens, it's when it happens. Because it's going to happen to you. It might not have happened yet, but eventually you're probably going to see the bottom of your kayak one time or another. So being prepared for that is a great thing. But practicing now, this time of year, you better practice with the proper equipment, too. I know a lot of people that take time out in the summer to practice turtle and recovering, but in shorts and T-shirt and 80-degree water, 85-degree water, whatever the temperature may be, is a lot more comfortable and easier on you than when you hit 40-some-degree water. What do you say, Vic?
Yeah, right now we're still in that period right now where it's time to get out and practice, get out the cold weather gear, you know, try whatever system people have, you know, decided they want to use, get out and try it out and see how it works. And then practice the rescues. The rescues are, you know, it's key to be able to get on the boat as fast as possible, get out of the water. Now it's time to practice.
When do we start thinking about a layer of, some type of layer to shield you from the water? When do you suggest to start?
Something we talked about earlier that you made a good point is, you know, even people in Florida got to start thinking about cold weather paddling. You know, once the water temperature starts dropping below about 80 degrees, it's time to start thinking about carrying a jacket, carrying some spare gear, clothing to rewarm, be caught in a rainstorm or something, got to have a way to warm back up. Up here, you know, we're going to start carrying stuff to rewarm now. We're in that transition period where it's time to start getting the gear out, trying stuff. I was out the other day with some people, and there were people wearing the dry suits already. So, you know, kind of depends on people's personal abilities and what they're comfortable with also. But the real key, we can talk more about it in a minute, but the real key is when the water temp starts getting below about 60 degrees, it's time to get the wet suits, the dry suits, and the wader, dry top combinations, that kind of stuff out.
Right. There's a rule of thumb. What's that? I know you Coast Guard guys have it down, but when the air temperature and the water temperature are below the, when you combine the two and they're below this number, start using a layer. What's that little magic thing you guys go by?
120 degrees. When you get the combined air water temperature below 120 degrees. And that comes into play a lot of time. You know, people have an air temperature that might be 70 degrees, but the water temperature is starting to drop down, and you've got to adjust for water temperature.
Right. Yeah, I knew what it was, but I wasn't sure, so I didn't want to spit it out and look any more of a fool than I usually do on here. So I wanted to make
That's
sure
perfect.
I got it right.
Perfect. Yeah,
120. So when the air temperature and the water temperature are below 120, you need to start thinking to dress right. So, all right. So where do we start with all that? So let's say we're at the 110 degree mark. So we've just got below that. What would you recommend? The breathable waders? Yes.
I said stay home.
Oh, stay home. You know better. She says that now, but she'll be out there when it's 40 degrees out.
Yeah. And that's where it gets really tricky is when you go with that combined number. The air temperature could be really high, and you start having the water temperature drops. You know, maybe Saturday afternoon, the air temperature gets up pretty nice. So, you know, always dressing, I like to focus more on the water temperature. Where's the water temperature at? That's what I want to dress for. I figure I can always cool down if I need to. I can splash water on myself if I really need to. But it's really hard to warm up if you've been in the water and you get chilled. So, you know, kind of always figure dressing for the water temp. The trick is dressing for comfort. So you can be comfortable while you're paddling, but then still being safe if you happen to capsize. So, you know, you got to dress for comfort at the same time.
Right. Well, shit, the fact, too, I was saying something the other day to somebody. Is, of course, we always think about that you may or may not turtle, but you always should be planning to be turtled and getting back in. But just that paddle splash, the water that's coming off of your drip rings and things like that, when that hits your body and your skin and you don't have something on there, and you're wet from just that alone and fishing and getting, you know, bringing your fish to the boat and getting wet and that cooler air hits you, it'll definitely chill you off right there too. So to have something, that's why I say, even this time of year for myself, I'll wear my breathable waders. I don't dress very warm underneath the waders because I'm not, you know, that cold, but I try to keep the water off of me at all times.
Yeah, that's where, like, you know, dry suits are an ideal situation. You can, the dry suit's going to keep a person dry, but it's not going to insulate them at all. So they've always got to dress for whatever the temperature is. You know, the nice thing is you can go as low as, you know, just a real light pair of long underwear underneath them, up to people wearing heavy fleece, vests, heavy, bulky, long underwear underneath, and, you know, fleece pants and stuff. And the same thing can be done with a wader dry top combination. It's just by how much layering is underneath of it. So,
right.
So what you're doing is actually, then, you know, what best ways to go.
Yeah, and then you go from there to the, like, neoprene style of waders, which aren't too bad, but I found that you want to deal with them when it does get kind of the air temperature is colder, because then you almost get too hot, and then if you start sweating, that seems worse than to be a little chilly, because once you get wet and cold, sweat inside of those waders, it's even harder to get warm. So the neoprene is definitely the next option as it gets colder, but not to throw that on too early, I don't think. Like I say, once you start sweating, it's even worse.
Yeah, neoprene is tricky because neoprene is great for an insulator in the water, but out of the water, you know, the wind cuts through it fairly easy. As you get to the really thick neoprenes, it'll work pretty good. Anybody that's ever dove much, kind of remember that. You get out of the water, you're feeling pretty good in the water, then you get out and the boat starts running and the wind's cutting through the neoprene and it really gets chilly quick, so you start throwing some jackets or windbreakers on. Same thing in kayaking. So if I'm wearing neoprene, Farmer John or something like that, I want to have something to cut the wind. So
right.
I usually suggest just a cheap windbreaker, good splash spray jacket, something to keep the, you know, the paddle drip from going down your arms and up into the inside of the jacket. Rain pants of some type just to keep the wind and spray and stuff off of you. You know, neoprene is going to do great in the water, but it's not the best out of the water.
All right, so let's go back then. We'll go back a little bit. So let's say like now we just talked about breathable waders. Underneath those breathable waders, we're going to do something like a fleece type of bottom, you would say, something to help you stay warm.
Yeah,
but
you got the breathable waders. Yeah, one of the big catches with breathable waders is making sure it's sealed good enough so that you're not getting a lot of water into them. I mean, the water pressure is probably going to keep them pretty tight against the bottle body, so they don't fill with water, but water is going to get into them. The trick with the waders, sometimes, depending on how they fit, and that's where, you know, PFD fit, that's going to keep it really snug around the torso. Sometimes the problem will be that water gets in them, and then the foot area fills with water, and it makes it really challenging to get back up onto a boat. So that's why it's so important to have a real snug fit or seal it up good.
Right. But I'll tell my story on myself, which a lot of people that know me probably have heard it before, but I turtled at the concrete ships. Kevin's in the chat room, so I know he's already starting to laugh. But, yeah, I turtled over at the concrete ships. I was wearing the neoprene combo we're talking about, the belt cinched tight around my waist. I had a dry top on, and then my PFD. Fell over trying to help someone pick up a big rockfish that he lost control of. I won't mention any names. Anyway, long story short is when I got back in the kayak, everything was self, you know, I was in and out of it in no time. I was back on top of my seat less than 10 seconds, I think. I fished the rest of the day, and I had no water. When I got back to the ramp and got out of my waders and dry top, I was completely dry underneath. Nothing got in, but using that combination that we talked about and having everything cinched tight, you know, I had the neoprene cuffs and everything on my paddling jacket. I was dry. I mean, I was chilly. I felt the effects of the cold water because I think it was 44-degree water temperature. So if you know how to self-rescue and then you hit that water like that, believe me, you move quick. You don't play around. You get back in that boat pretty quick when you hit that 44-degree temperature. But I say that about Kevin because Kevin paddled around at one of the ships about that time, and the first thing he says, "Damn, Mosier, you look awful wet." So I just thought it was funny out of all times for him to show up around the corner. But, yeah, so having that combination we just talked about does work. It's probably not, you know, the most safest thing in those conditions, but it does work if you put all those components together properly.
Yeah, I think you hit it right in the head. It's like having it all fit together right. And one of the most important thing you mentioned is you were out of the water really fast. The longer you stay in the water, the more systems like that allow water to get into them. And that's where it's really, really important to be, you know, really on top of rescue, to be able to get out of the water fast. Did you want to talk a little bit about, like, cold shock and PFDs at all?
Yeah, I want to talk about everything that I think we need to cover tonight because we don't need any. I want to make sure every one of our listeners come back every week and tell us fishing stories, and I don't want any stories coming from the bad side of town. So I want everybody to know tonight. Everybody, again, if you have a question for Vic or anything that you'd like to share, put it up in the chat room or give us a call. We're ready for you. So go ahead. Yeah, let's talk about it, Vic. Let's do it.
That's one of the things, you know, and you're hitting, once again, you know, good topic because it's, The big fear I think we all have is, you know, opening the paper on Saturday morning or something to find out somebody got in trouble, and, you know, we just don't want to read about that. So the more we can prep people and get them ready, the better. The cold shock, the big thing about that is, you know, anybody that doesn't go out with a PFD at this time of year, just really not a smart move, because the PFD, your personal flotation device, is what's going to get somebody back to the surface. You know, you talk about when you hit the water, you hit that really cold water. The first thing for most people is that gas reflex. They could inhale, you know, 2 to 3 quarts of water when they first hit the water if their head goes underwater. If that happens, the likelihood of them getting back to the surface, you know, starts dropping down really fast. So they may not get that chance for, you know, the rescue or even for hypothermia to set in because cold shock is going to take them. More people probably die from cold shock than hypothermia because they never get a chance. They inhale that water, go under, PFD never brings them to the surface, and it's done. So that's why the PFD is so important. It brings people back to the surface and gives them a chance to get their breath back. And that kind of leads into, there's a few different rules out there. One of them is the 1-10-1 rule. I think the Coast Guard came up with that not too long ago. But they basically say you have 1 minute to get your breath under control, 10 minutes to get the rescue, and then you have an hour before your hypothermia sets into the point where you're not going to recover severe hypothermia. It all depends on how a person's dressed and what kind of equipment they have on. But, you know, it's something to keep in thought in mind as far as that 1 minute to get the breath under control and then 10 minutes to get the rescue done, which is a lot of time.
Yeah, 10 minutes is a long time because, yeah, you're right about, if you know how, you don't play around, you get back in there pretty quick, so I couldn't imagine of being in that water for 10 minutes, let alone any more than I was. So.
And basically their idea is after 10 minutes, the body is shut down so much that rescue is not going to happen. So that's when somebody else is going to have to do the rescue for you. But you're right. Rescue, you know, getting back out of the water fast is key. There's all these different things. You know, you get the Marines have done a bunch of studies about how long people can last in the water. Coast Guard's done a bunch of studies, you know, a bunch of private studies. You know, another one that they've got out there that's pretty interesting, you know, anytime somebody's considering swimming towards shore, there's one, they have a 50-50-50 rule, which is 50-degree water temperature dress. You know, if you're not dressed for immersion, 50 feet from shore, you have a 50% chance of making it.
Wow.
So, you know, where the PFD comes back into play. So it's usually better not to try to swim.
Right, because Mitchell Dorsey just put up in the chat room, and I knew this to be true too, is because your body just naturally starts shutting down to the appendage of your arms and your legs to try to retain your heat in your torso. And he said you lose use of your arms and legs by 10 minutes because your body starts to save it all the heat and energy for the torso to try to keep your organs and all working. So, yeah, trying to swim probably doesn't work very long.
Yeah, that's how that 50-50-50, they actually did studies of Olympic swimmers seeing how long they could swim, and their bodies, their legs were just basically going dropping down to almost vertical in the water because they were losing the ability in their legs and arms. And you know, these are people that spend a lot of time in the water, and they still couldn't do it.
Right. I know we're on a topic. I got a question. I'm going to interrupt you just because it'll fly by and I'll forget about them. So we're going to get off of what we're talking about just so I don't lose this question and we can go back to it. Or I'm going to mention it and you can get it later. Someone, Joe Campo, was asking, got any advice on brand, price, et cetera, on getting a replacement for his dry top? So we'll get the dry tops, but just remember you can spit out a couple recommendations there for Joe later on about dry tops, and I know I'm going to forget.
Okay.
Anyway, we had another question about exactly how do you rescue someone else without putting yourself in danger? You see, I told you the questions are going to come in, so now.
All right. I like that. Big thing with, you know, staying in control, if you're the person that's on your boat rescuing somebody in the water, staying in control, putting their boat between your boat and the person that you're rescuing. One of the big keys is being able to stabilize their boat, and then if, depending on how much they're able to help you, you know, if they can kick their legs and swim up onto their boat, if they're doing it from the outside, it's much easier. That way you're stabilizing their boat. They can reach across. Mark, if it was me and you and you were in the water, you could reach across your boat, grab onto mine. It would help you pull yourself up onto your boat. And then remember the belly butt feet idea. You know, get your belly up on top of the boat, kick the feet out, and then just kind of rotate up into the feet. But by leaning across the boat, I could use your boat to stabilize myself while I'm helping you into your boat. So I want to keep the boat between us.
Okay. Is that making sense to whoever asked the question is what I'm trying to... I guess not. I don't know. I know it's one of those things that's tough to describe over the radio as opposed to doing it in person, so I don't have anything back. Okay,
yeah,
we'll keep moving on.
This is, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't think about is, you know, people spend a lot of time paddling, doing a forward stroke and paddling forward, but they never really get very, you know, fishing around the bridges, I think people do, but get proficient at the maneuvering strokes. So if we're paddling side by side and the person capsizes, you can do those quick maneuvering strokes to get to them as quick as possible, and you know, not just doing constant circles around them, trying to narrow down that circle so you can get close to them. So maneuvering strokes are really important too.
And again, practicing this stuff before you go out and making sure that you know what you're doing, like Vic said earlier, and practicing in the gear. That's another thing is I know we always do that at the little TKA events we had, and maybe we can put you on the spot here before the show's over. Maybe we can try to line up something for our, at least for our local people, we can try to do maybe a little cold water class again like we used to do if they're not planning. I haven't seen it on TKA's site that anybody's planning to do it, but to practice in the gear and practice with your boat rigged like you're going to go fishing, you know. I mean, I hate to say you don't need to necessarily maybe put all your rods on there, but then you're going to go home and clean rods, but have more of the stuff on your boat that you would normally have, a crate on there, because all that changes the dynamics of the boat too when you're trying to flip it back over, the weight and the other obstacles that are on the kayak. So I strapped down all my rods that day that I did. When that boat came back up, it looked like a spider with all the rods whipping up in the air. So kind of make sure that you're paying attention to your gear on the boat that you would be using when you're on the water in this situation. So, and then getting, I tell you, that was one thing. And as quickly as it happened to me, it does make a big difference because you're a little more like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in the wintertime than you are in the summer. So you do feel a little more clumsy when you're doing it and trying to get yourself, what do you call it, the belly button roll or whatever, Vic, what's it called?
Belly feet, yeah.
Belly button. Yeah. So when you try to get up there, when you got a little bigger belly than normal because you're wearing all that clothing, it makes it a little different. So you definitely need to practice.
Yeah, and having the boat outfitted, you're right. That's really important because you want to practice with the boat the way it's going to be when you fish. And this is when it gets really important to try not to take extra stuff, streamline it down to what somebody really needs. you know, sometimes get carried away taking a lot of stuff, thinking, well, maybe the rockfish are going to be right, maybe the trout, maybe the flounder. I want to take stuff for all these different species and kind of narrow it down to what you're really going for and streamline the boat a little bit less stuff, just in case you do get in trouble. There's less stuff getting in the way, less stuff to lose, and you can get that rescue a lot faster.
Right.
Sometimes the habits take so much stuff. You know, this time of year, really cut back, keep stuff out of the way. It's weird how, like just an anchor trolley, you know, it doesn't seem like a big thing, and all of a sudden you're doing a rescue and it's in the way, and you're snagging something on it as you're trying to get up on the boat. So, you know, practice ahead of time so you know what could be an issue.
Yeah, everything snags when you're doing those things. It's like fly fishing. Fly line finds everything when you're out there, so it'll definitely get hung up on things. All right, so let's start talking about the real cold weather, the serious cold weather gear. I know people have been talking about dry tops, dry suits, and all that in the chat room. I've been seeing go by. So let's run down. Let's get all the differences. Let's see. So we've got the wader dry tops combination already kind of covered, I think. If anybody has any questions about that, let's go ahead and ask. But the next thing, let's do dry suits. I know a lot of people, their first big fear about a dry suit isn't the fact of wearing it, but paying for it. But we can always
yeah.
use that simple how much is your life worth type of thing. So, you know, $600 or I don't know how much your insurance policy is and if your wife or husband doesn't want you to buy a dry suit for a reason maybe, but other than that, I don't think that was a joke. But, yeah, so I know it's the first thing I always hear people always say that, you know, dry suits are so expensive, but then again,
the issue about dry suits is down. I think about how much do I spend on a set of waders. If I'm going to get a decent set of waders, then I add a dry top to it. My layers are going to have to be a little bit better going with that system because with a dry suit, I can back off just a little bit on the layers underneath. But a dry top and waders, by the time I get a decent dry top and waders, I'm going to be in a similar price point.
Right.
Not too much different. Dry suits, you start out in the $600 range now. You know, Kokatat's got one, you know, their angler suit, which is reinforced on the front of the legs, designed for anglers, and that's, you know, a little over $600. Start getting into the real nice Gore-Tex suit. I mean, the thing about that angler suit, it's made out of Tropos, so it's similar to Gore-Tex, but it does breathe very, very well.
Now, which suit was that? Say that one more time, just in case anybody is taking notes or listening.
That's the Kokatat Angler.
Okay.
Made by Kokatat, and the model is the Angler, which is, we've sold a lot of those suits. It's actually been an extremely popular suit. I think in our area, that's been one of the go-to suits for people.
And the price on those?
$600 ballpark. I think they go about $610.
Okay. All right, keep moving. I just want to give some people some ideas, so... What other suits do you suggest out there in the dry suit category?
Immersion Research has a few suits. There's several companies that make some nice suits. You know, it's just Kokatat's really focused on what anglers are looking for. They've reinforced the front of the leg. That's one of the reasons I think that suit's been so popular for us. It's definitely been one of the better ones.
Can I ask a stupid question?
The only
stupid question is
the one not asked.
What's the difference between a dry and a wetsuit?
Good question.
Yeah, good. Very good. Actually, and we all kind of take it for granted that we know that. But a wetsuit is actually going to be a neoprene-type suit. That's going to, and what typically is worn by kayakers is a Farmer John style where the arms are exposed. So you have neoprene covering the torso and the legs. And the idea with a wetsuit is it should be very snug-fitting because the way that it works is by warming a very, very thin layer of water between the suit and the skin. So the way the wetsuit works is it warms that layer of water between the suit and the skin. So it's got to be very tight-fitting so that that water doesn't flush in and out of the suit all the time. A dry suit, the way that works is basically like putting on a pair of coveralls with gaskets at the neck and wrists and then feet that are attached. So inside that, completely sealed up, so water will not get inside the suit. So it's going to be very dry inside the suit. So it's actually the layers that are worn under the suit to keep you warm as opposed to that microfilm of water.
But what for us in the kayak world, it's really a wetsuit. The quote-unquote wetsuit that we think of like a surfer wears does us no good because that's only working when you're in the water. And we are trying not to be in the water. To have the neoprene suit, the neoprene-style waders or whatever, and then something between you and those waders, the neoprene work better. Because if you ever watch a surfer in the wintertime, when they're out there, they're surfing, they're fine. As soon as they get out of the water, they're freezing because they don't have that trapped water inside. The first thing they're doing is trying to get out of that wetsuit. So really a wetsuit, as we all think of it, is not the best or something we shouldn't be wearing because unless you get wet, it's not doing you any good. Now, some people in the chat room were talking about using it as a restroom also to keep you warm, but that's why you never buy a used wetsuit, because anybody tells you that they didn't do that in their wetsuit's lying. So you go ahead there. And they knew who they are in the chat room. They were believing themselves to stay warm, but yeah, that doesn't last long anyway.
Don asks, do they have a dry suit with a zipper?
Yes, they do. The front door zipper.
Yep, the zipper, the relief zipper is extremely important. Definitely have a relief zipper. and then most zippers are going to...
Unfortunately, it's only really good for us gentlemen in the group, though. Unfortunately, I don't think they make a female version of that.
Well,
what they do for women, if we want to get onto that topic, is they sell a similar suit, and with the suit, they will sell... there's actually a funnel comes with the suit. But that is what it's set up for women. That is from Kokatat.
There's women. We have women in the chat room. We have Chris listening in, so it's good to know. I mean, not just men fish. So.
Thank you.
Release zipper for men only. See, that's what I was saying. Yes, the release zipper is basically designed that it only is functional for men. Melita, trying to make that a point. Get out of town. See how she's chiming in too. So I got Chris on the air, and then I got the chat room woman listener going at it. So maybe you guys need to write a letter to the industry dry suit makers, and you can work on something.
And actually, the other thing for women is there is drop. They do have a drop seat in some of the suits too, which are drop seats for the women's suits. So that's another option for some of the women's suits.
All right, there we go. See, got to ask all the questions. We're all adults here, so. And it's ergonomically shaped. That's why I'm not reading the chat room, because I think they just went off on a tangent about the funnel now. So.
Believe me, if this wasn't
a family show right now, I'd be letting them have it with the funnel and the cold water temperatures, because some of you guys might not clear the release zipper.
I've seen that thing on the internet because they sell it separately for other duck hunting activities and stuff. Before I use that.
Oh, man.
Just saying.
Yeah.
It's either that or they're eating a lot of vegetables.
it's got a little tube with the funnel, Melita. That's what kind of, I'm trying not to be too... Honey, get her a link and send it to her in the private area there. Melita's asking about the funnel. It has a funnel. Tom Vanderheyen already got the link up there, so we're good.
We'll
have a Photoshop pretty soon. Right. This will be good.
This wasn't where I thought the show was going to go tonight, but boom, now we got Redfish Chuck, if you're going to use that as a beer funnel, you better hope you're the only person that's used it at all, because don't be passing that funnel around.
What's even funnier, Tom, we put up the website, and it has an advertising card, goldgirl.com. It's a Mini Cooper.
It's a Mini Cooper. He put the hyphen in there or something. At least they didn't come up with JB's Gallery of Girls or something.
For the record, I wouldn't use that thing just on principle because it's pink. Does it not come in other colors? Not every woman wants pink products.
So Tom Vanderhyde, you're trying to sell a car on our radio show. Nice, buddy. Real smooth. Now you're a car salesman.
And that's Carolina complained that you said send it to the private area. Good one, Mark.
Well, I didn't know. But look, if we'd done that, we wouldn't have had a Mini Cooper advertisement being on our radio show tonight either. So, see, I was going the right way with that because somebody messed it up. So.
Sorry.
All right,
okay,
all right, Vic. Let's see if we can get back on track here. So now that we've all been prepared,
this goes back to the beginning.
Right. And now we successfully know that we can stay out of the water a little longer because we all have ways of relieving ourselves. And we bring a case of beer. What's that? Wow. Once again, the Double L Show hits a new all-time low.
It's needed this week. Oh, my God. I'm going to mute myself for a second.
Yeah, somebody put up the shows about fishing, right? Well, that's what I said. We're making sure that we can keep everybody on the water as long as possible between being properly dressed, warm, and relieving yourself. We're making sure that you guys all have a good time on the water. Oh, yeah. Please. All right. So where were we before we got into that topic? So we were talking about dry fishing. So now we know about that part of the dry suit. All right, so here's the thing about a dry suit, and I hear a lot of people complain about them, and anybody who in the chat room or has listening owns one, is the neck.
And
the neoprene,
dry suit,
the collar around
styles.
The neck.
Yeah, the neoprene style or else the latex style. With the latex style, they'll usually have little rings on them, and you can trim those rings in right fit. It's also possible to switch them out with coffee can or something.
Oh, okay. My God. What just happened?
Where did Vic go?
Vic?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
We're echoing. Does anybody hear the echo, or is that just me?
No.
Yeah, I'm hearing an echo. That's why I stopped a second.
That was my phone. WVEZ is actually sending me an update. Sorry,
I'll mute my phone. There was an echo. All right, let's stop for a second. It's echoing. Let's regroup here. What's going on? We got an echo.
Yeah.
All right. Sound control lady, what's going on?
I don't see anything. There's no reason. We're not buffering or anything. Sounds like
I know.
Here, how about I do a sound clip?
How would you know if that echo?
Sounds like I'm talking through a
You Go Girl funnel or something.
Which, by the way, Tom pointed out comes in camo.
Oh,
camo. All right. We were talking about the collar, the neck collar. Not as
yep.
Oh, it's really bad.
What's
so on
wrong?
The neck?
Oops.
It's on the neck. Did you want me to get onto that neck gasket again, or?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sure that's where we were when it was breaking up.
Yeah, because the thing about that neck gasket is if it's neoprene, it can be stretched out, and even the neoprene ones can be trimmed down, so you want to try to get it down to the right fit. The key is not trimming it down so much that it's loose and water can get in. So it should be snug, but not so snug. And you want to be able to breathe. One thing about the way that the different gaskets work, on the latex gasket, if people remember back to stick shifts, when you had on the stick shift, you usually have a rubber gasket where it went into the body of the car. Latex gaskets work like that. So the latex actually moves with your neck. Neoprene sometimes causes a little bit more chafing, but it's going to be a lot, typically doesn't have to be quite as tight either. So because it can back off a little bit on the tightness, sometimes a little bit more comfortable for people.
Gotcha. All right. I'm looking through our notes here. So we got that, the dry suits. Obviously, getting one properly fitted, too, not just buying any one used or off the shelf. Make sure you definitely try it on. Some companies that, you know, they have a sizing chart and everything like that, so you can get them properly fitted. It would also be a, how loose should you get a dry suit?
Sometimes it depends.
How much room for base layering?
Yeah. And quite often, if you go by the sizing charts, I mean, Kokatas is very good. I think Immersion Researches is very good. Level 6 has a pretty good setup. Typically, if you go by those sizing charts, they allow for some layering underneath, so there's a little bit of room. I know in the store we always try to keep a full size run. So if we know we're looking at Kokatas suits, if you try on, as long as you're trying on one of their suits, it'll let you know where you fall as far as all their other suits. So, you know, even if it might not be the same style you want that a person would want, at least they would know the right size. That definitely helps a lot. And I know in our case at Appomattox, we can tap into the inventory at Farmville, and we've got quite a few suits up there also. But we usually try to keep a full-size run of that angler because that is such a popular suit.
I'm not sure if this is a joke question or not. Somebody asked what's the difference between dry and semi-dry.
That's a good question. The semi-dry is usually the neoprene necks. Dry suits are usually going to have the latex. Latex is going to be a much more secure fit. Semi-dry sometimes also will be not as snug of a fit on the wrist, so it's usually not going to be as watertight, I guess. But it's usually going to be neoprene versus the latex neck.
Would they be cheaper?
Close. Usually the dry suits are going to be a little bit more. The semi-dry, you know, like the angler suit is actually considered a semi-dry suit. So for what most kayak anglers are going to do, it's plenty of protection. The time that most people are going to go to an actual dry suit would be a whitewater paddler, somebody playing in the surf where they know that their head's going to be going underwater frequently. Most kayak anglers, it's more of an issue of, you know, something goes wrong, there's a quick immersion, but then they're back out. So the dry suit really comes into play more for somebody that's underwater a lot, you know, whitewater paddler, paddling very aggressively, or surf.
All right. Someone said, I believe the semi-dry tops don't have a gasket at the waist either. So they do have a gasket, but it's not as good of a gasket.
Yeah, the dry tops, there's a couple different styles. A lot of times they're going to have a tunnel, and the tunnel is actually designed for when somebody's paddling a boat that has a skirt where they have a spray skirt, and the skirt actually does like a sandwich setup where the skirt's going to go up over one layer of the dry top, and then another layer is going to go over top of the skirt. So it gives a much better layering system to keep water out of the boat. Most kayak anglers aren't going to need that type of a setup. But it will give a snugger fit over top a set of waders by going that direction. What they have is called the cummerbund, is what's secured around the waist, and it's basically a real heavy-duty Velcro or else a draw cord of some type, and that can be secured really tight around the waders. It gives a much better seal.
All right, so we pretty much covered your upper body, your lower body, so to speak. So we got your torso, everything's tucked in there. So we're getting close to it. Well, we can run over tonight. All right, so we've done that. So now let's keep our head and our hands warm. So what do you suggest let's start with the hands, gloves, mittens, and then you got pogies down here. I know what pogies are, but maybe you can tell everybody real quick what a pogie is. If you're in the Navy, in the Marine Corps, pogies are the people that do admin jobs that sit at a desk all day. Those are pogies. And then the little machine that puts out the chips in the cupcakes and all those are, that's called pogie bait in the military, so I don't know where they got the same thing here, but anyway. So what's a pogie in the kayak industry?
Starting from the basics, most, you know, like when I'm out fishing, I hate wearing any kind of gloves. I don't like having anything on my hands, so quite often when I'm paddling out, I want to keep my hands as warm as possible, and a lot of it depends how cold it is, you know, going out or coming back in or changing positions. Gloves are usually the first layer, the first line of defense, I guess. They start out with gloves, and then they can go different thicknesses, just neoprene, half mil. You can go up to some pretty heavy gloves with up to like 2 or 3 millimeter thicknesses of neoprene. And as everybody knows, if you know live up north anywhere or anywhere in colder areas, gloves will never keep your hands as warm as mittens will. So if you go to mittens, then the fingers all start working together, and they're going to stay a lot drier or a lot warmer. So the nice thing about mittens, what I personally like to do is if I'm paddling when it starts getting colder out, if I stop the fish, my hands are going to get cold, but if I slip them into mittens, they're actually going to warm up much faster than they would with gloves because the fingers are all trying to work individually in a pair of gloves. So I'll put the mittens on, warm up my hands, sometimes I'll just tuck them inside my PFD, try to warm them up between the layer between the PFD and the body. That's typically a pretty warm area. But if you're paddling, the mittens are usually going to be the warmest. After that is pogies. What pogies are is something that attaches to the paddle, and your hand slides inside of it, and then you can hold on to the paddle inside the pogie. Whitewater paddlers quite often use them because they want to have better control of the paddle and have a better feel for the paddle. Kayak anglers, it's more an issue of warming up the hands, and the paddle shaft is usually pretty cold, so pogies aren't always the best idea for kayak angling, but it is something that, you know, we do carry in the store. People see them and they wonder about them, so it's kind of nice to know up front. Hopefully that covers
it. How do the pogies stay attached to your paddle?
There's a Velcro strip. You basically undo the Velcro, wrap it around the paddle, and then strip attached to the paddle. It almost creates like a big glove or a big case that goes around the hand while it's over top of the paddle.
All right. Well, we already got one in that wants pogies for Christmas because her hands stay cold.
Yep. Pogies are nice because you have much better control of the paddle. You know, your hands are actually on the paddle shaft as opposed to having a layer of neoprene between the hand and the paddle.
Very good. All right, let's keep our head warm. What do you suggest there?
A couple different ideas. One is, you know, it's a wet sport, so one of the things that works really good is like a skull cap. The idea is to have a neoprene outer layer with a fuzzy rubber or fleece inner layer, so water hits it, it's going to be shed. But try to avoid, you know, sometimes wool hats work really good. Think about all the paddle drip, quite often getting hit on the head by some type of water, so something that's going to shed that water. Wool hats, big thing is keeping the head warm. Sometimes it's not a bad idea to carry two hats. That way if you go in the water, one hat gets wet, you can shed hat on, a different system for rewarming. The skull cap idea works really good, where it's basically a neoprene on the outside and a fleece on the inside.
Right. All right, something that you mentioned earlier before the show we talked about, and something that a lot of people don't think about, but you put in the notes were staying fueled with water and energy food. And that's something when you're out there and it's cold, you don't think about hydrating because you're cold, and you don't think about drinking water and having little energy type of snacks on. I mentioned to you before the show, I remember in the Marine Corps cold weather training, we got more to eat in the Marine Corps when we went to cold weather training and better quality of food in the cold than we did any other time that we were out in the field. The best MREs they ever had were the winter package. So eating, I learned that long time ago that little snacks all day long in the cold is a lot better, and to drink water. You don't think about it. You don't want to put cold water in you because it's cold out, you think, but definitely.
Yeah, exactly, because you're burning a lot of calories to keep the core warm and keeping the body warm, so the body's burning a lot of calories. And inhaling and exhaling, I mean, it's real dry air, so a lot of moisture can be lost in just a breath, let alone being in a dry suit, and there's always that little bit of vapor coming off the skin.
Right.
Just trying to keep people
dehydrating in 40 degrees isn't really good either.
Yeah, it's hard to do, and you know, I usually recommend if it's getting cold out, carry a thermos, have some way to rewarm, but a thermos of hot liquid is definitely a good way to go.
Stay away from the other. the adult beverage doesn't work. It might give you a sense of warmth, but stay away from the liquor, the alcohol. Yep, see, there, I knew it. Chuck, put it up there. Thank you, Chuck. Jack Daniels in his camel pack. How'd I know you were going to say that?
Packs of hot hands, too, somebody wrote. What's your take on those hand and foot warmers, Vic?
Actually, I think they're pretty good. The ones where you just break the package open and then you kind of squeeze a little bit and warm it, those actually work pretty good. I use a lot. Actually, hunting, I use them quite a bit. They work very nice. Some people use them just for hand warmers, stick them inside a glove and, you know, say I'm get done fishing one spot and I want to move to another spot, warm up the hands real good using those packets. And you can put them inside a PFD pocket or something. They work great.
Yeah, keep your hands. They have it for your shoes, too.
I got some advice on the people that are going to use the foot or the toe warmers. Read the directions on how to apply them.
They get hot, really hot.
If you put them on the wrong way, like I did one year while fishing a trout tournament in January, your feet never warm up. And then you get back to the car and you wonder, you're looking at it, it's like, dang, my foot warmers didn't work. So I just happened to look at the package. I put them on the wrong way.
She was warm in the bottom of her shoe, but not the bottom of her foot.
Oh, nice.
They radiate one way. They don't radiate both ways. They only radiate heat one way, and the way that she accidentally put them in was radiating. So if you would have touched the bottom of her shoe, you probably would have got warmed up, but the top of her foot never got it.
Some of those need air exposure to get activated good, too. So you got to get them activated real good before putting them inside the boots or the shoes or something, too. Otherwise, it'll take longer to activate.
Yeah, that was a cold day. Seth just put up, we fished that trout tournament. That was the coldest day I ever fished. It was pretty dang on cold that day. Backing up, though, somebody asked in the chat room again, Melita asked, what about the ski mask things? They feel warmer.
That's
most
great.
Oh, the moisture from your breath can't be good, can it? So if it gets wet from the moisture,
There's some of them that are made of neoprene, though. They're skiers wear a lot that work really, really good. Either having the cold air and wind on your face or something like that. And a lot of them, you want to make sure there's some kind of a breathe hole. You want to spot for your mouth or your nose so that the moisture is not being trapped underneath the mask. But they work really good.
Gotcha. Yeah, they have slots in them. Yeah, they have the slots in the mouth, and plus they usually all come to where they tuck down into your top or whatever, so you kind of got some kind of something to keep your neck warm and all, too. That's one of the biggest things I hate, when that cold air is blowing around your neck and your ears. That's what seems to make you really cold. Once your head gets cold, like you said earlier, keeping your head warm. My head's warm, I feel pretty good, but once your head starts getting chilly, you're ready to call it a day.
Yeah, and the balaclava stuff work really good for that. That where you know kind of comes down around the neck, goes over the side of the head. Really,
what'd you call it?
The balaclava.
Yeah, I saw a thing the other day where he said something to his dad. I forget where I saw that, and his dad said, "Yeah, he's got one of those baklava things in his car. He'll put on because it's getting cold out."
Yeah, balaclava.
That's a Greek pastry. Yeah, that's a Greek pastry of baklava.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, people say, if your feet start getting cold, it's time to put on a hat. So, you know, because usually your feet are one of the first things that the core is going to start cutting off the blood supply. You know, the blood supply is going to start cutting off down there as far as warming up the feet. So if the head's getting cold, the first thing they want to do is keep putting the blood supply up there so the feet are going to start getting cold. Put a hat on.
There you go. That's a good thing to remember. And then, of course, there's the all-present and everybody. We've talked about it before, and we'll just run through it real quick because we're at 9 o'clock now. But the usual safety things of the pre-trip, planning a float plan, the buddy system, of course, going out, especially this time, especially at night if you're going out. Do not go alone. I don't care how seasoned you are or whatever the case may be, but you don't need to be out at that bridge tunnel fishing for stripers at night by yourself in these cold conditions. There's plenty of us knuckleheads out there that I'm sure if you make a phone call or two or post up that you're going, they'll join you out there at nighttime. But don't be going out at night by yourself in this cold weather. It's not great to be out there at night in the warm weather by yourself if something bad happens, but definitely in the cold weather. But make sure you do the trip, the float plan, let somebody know. you stay longer than you anticipate, let somebody know. Call that person you left that float plan with, too. If the bite's real hot, don't forget about the people back home you told them that you're going out, because you're going to look right stupid when the Coast Guard or the local Marine police pull up on you and you're still out there on the water. They don't like to be called out either. I'm sure you've had a few of those in your Coast Guard days or heard good stories of that, haven't you, Vic?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. If anybody's got time, come by. I can tell you all kinds of stories about people not following their float plans. And that gets real interesting, especially when they find them at a bar or something. So,
oh, yeah.
Follow the float plan.
Yeah, I know a similar person that a story like that happened to. That they went fishing, but they didn't take their kayak, if you know what I mean. But they told the other half that they were going fishing with so-and-so, and they weren't there. So, yeah. Follow a legit float plan, too.
I don't end up with a pretty good find, usually. And one last thing, I just want to hit real quick. Make sure that there's something in the car in case somebody does capsize or get turtled or somehow gets chilled while they're out. Make sure that, you know, always keep spare clothes and stuff in the car. You get back, got a way to warm up fast, change into some dry clothes quick.
What do you think of those warming blankets? Those warm, you know, the big sheet of tin foil it looks like, aluminum foil?
It depends how cold it is. Sometimes it works good. I think it's probably better to have just a change of clothes, a hat, and a jacket to put on real quick. Those blankets, sometimes they work good. It just depends how cold it is out.
I didn't know how they really work, period. I didn't know if they needed sunlight, some kind of light, if they worked any time, or what was the deal. Fortunately,
you got
to
be warm. Yeah, well, one thing about them is the body's got to be warm enough to be giving off some heat to reflect, but if you get really chilled or start getting into hypothermia, unless there's somebody else inside that blanket with you, there's got to be some heat to reflect. But they help, but there's some other – I mean, I'd recommend having a dry bag with a warm jacket, a change of clothes, a warm hat, a pair of, you know, heavy wool socks. You know, HRBT, get up under the bridge and change clothes real fast.
Right.
It looks better.
Take appropriate layers when you go out, too. I know a lot of people don't think about, like, when you leave and it's sunny, but you stay out as it gets wet. You know, you can always put it on, but you can't. You don't have it with you, you can't put it on when you're out there too. So you might start at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it seems kind of warm and nice because the sun's out, but it gets dark at 5 o'clock now, so make sure you got extra things to put on when you're out there too. Whatever you leave the dock with shouldn't be all you have.
Exactly. And it just makes the trip that much more fun. You can stay comfortable temperature wise, you know, the whole trip's much better and stay out a little longer.
Right on.
Much better.
Very cool. Do we have any more questions or anything so we can get you guys back to your Tuesday evening? I know everybody's waiting to get in front of the TV and see what's going on out there in the world, but anything going on? Anybody have any questions, anything we can help you with? I hope everybody stays safe. Go by the store and visit Vic if you're in the Hampton area. Give us the three locations for all of our, at least our Virginia fans here that we have tonight, so they know where to come if they're looking to upgrade or start getting their winter supplies together. So where can they come and find you at?
Well, the three stores, we got, you know, Appomattox River Company, the main store, which is the warehouses, is up in Farmville. That's the big store, and we're, you know, as most people know, we've got probably over 2,000 boats up there. So I think now we're getting up about 2,500 boats in Farmville. Midlothian.
How many?
That's
2,500?
Right now, I believe they're up about 2,500 right now, 2,500 boats. We're starting to bring some new boats in. In fact, the Slayer just showed up, I believe. So I think we've got some Slayers in stock. So,
that's right.
I believe we've got some. But the other store, we have one in Midlothian, and then the Hampton store down, you know, right down here in Hampton, which used to be in Yorktown. We shut down the Yorktown store, and now we're down in Hampton. But that's been working out real good for us. And the Hampton store, we're there Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturday 9 to 5, and Sunday 1 to 5.
Very cool. We'll stop by, give Vic a call, let him hook you up with the proper cold weather gear or wherever you are. Go to a good store in your area. I know for our North Carolina fans, we got Get Outdoors, who always helps us with our North Carolina report. There's several out there. So make sure you get the right knowledge, get the right stuff, so you don't have to quit fishing just because it gets cold, unless you want to. I understand that, too. Not everybody likes to be out in the cold, but the fishing doesn't quit here in Virginia just because the water temperatures get a little colder. If anything, they sense the Sometimes it gets a little better around here, especially with the rockfish. I know guy Kevin's been awful quiet in there tonight, but I know he's got to be getting geared up for that coming soon, so maybe we'll start covering that topic next for all of our local fans about the concrete ships in Ealing. We'll get on that soon because it won't be long. These water temperatures keep dropping up north, so the big cows will be on their way down. So, all right, well, if there's no more questions, we're after 9. We'll get out of here. Chris, you got anything important going on in that chat room of yours you've been following?
No.
Not nothing. Well, then they're behaving, I guess.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Pretty much.
I hope I didn't knock the show down tonight by being so negative about being safe out there, but like we said at the top of the show, we don't want to read about any of you except for good fish stories. We don't want to see anything bad out there, so... Go out there.
I want to hear
properly.
Out there, safe.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, maybe we'll get together. We'll talk about that after the show, Vic, one day, about maybe we can do something before it gets real cold here, and we can try to get some of the local people together, and we'll do a
self-rescue
turtling crest.
Yeah, that sounds great. Maybe tomorrow we can get together, get our calendars out, and come up with some dates. That sounds great.
Sounds good. All right. Yes, Chuck, Boondoggle. Don't forget, everybody, the President's Day Boondoggle, February 14th through the 18th. No motor zone. You got a button there?
I'm looking. It's somewhere.
Get the one with Chuck streaking.
Where'd it go?
Ricky Bobby.
Here we go. Ready?
Boondoggle! Boondoggle. Boondoggle. Boondoggle? What the heck is a boondoggle? I suggest you get your butt up, come find out, February 15th through 18th, President's Day weekend in Titusville, Florida at Cars Park. It'll be one heck of a weekend with good people, and then there's a bunch of kayakers too. For more information, go to yakangler.com, your ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
All right. That wasn't the right one. Chuck didn't get his freaking call. Chuck, I'm giving you a shout-out tonight. You didn't give me you said I don't give you a shout-out, so everybody be sure on Monday to tune in to Redfish Chuck Show on Kayak Fishing Radio. The man, the myth, Redfish Chuck. I'm not going to call you a legend yet because we haven't came down to your President's Day boondoggle with these big fish you're talking about. You better pin them up because we're all coming down. The Virginia Posse is rolling in. So I want to see all this talk. Anyway, no, you guys go check out Redfish Chuck on Monday nights. Tomorrow night is Mark Wheeler. Thursday night, the godfather, the man who started this whole crazy kayak fishing radio thing, Chip Gibson. We don't have Rat Reg there. No, maybe you don't. That's okay. Go ahead. Brag whatever you want to do, whatever you call yourself. See, that's the last shout-out you get. All right, Chuck, you're on the bottom of the list now. Just joking. Wow. Invading. That's right. We are invading.
We are invading.
You wouldn't have brought all your crappy.
Coffee.
Yeah, we're coming down strong. So anyway, y'all go check out the Boondoggle on Kayak Fishing Radio and yakangler.com. If you're not familiar with it, it's a little ways off, but before you know it, it'll be here. President's Day weekend, February 14th through the 18th. It's going to be a lot of fun. 100 days and counting. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Be safe out there. Get your stuff together for our local contingent. We're going to go fishing, whether it's cold or not. So let's go get it. Be safe this week. We got a nor'easter coming. Plan accordingly. Check the winds. Looks like it's going to lay down by the weekend. And I guess that's all I got.
Okay, I found the rig. Ricky Bobby Boondoggle button, so I'm going to hit that one time, and then I'm going to say my piece. Ready?
All right.
Boondoggle, boondoggle, boondoggle? What the heck is a boondoggle? Come out President's Day weekend to Cars Park in Titusville, Florida for family fun, great fishing in the no motor zone, and hang out with a bunch of crazy kayakers.
We're going streaking! Yes!
Put your clothes back on, Chuck. For more information, please visit yakangler.com, your ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
know how to take that, Chuck. Are you offering particular female entertainment down there? Anyways, remember safety, 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 people. Remember your lines, your lights, and take your children fishing. They're our next generation angler, although they're probably with me. The colder it gets, they're going to want to stay home. Tight lines, everybody, no matter where you're fishing. Good night.
Thanks again, Vic. Thanks again, Vic.
Thanks.
Good night.
Obama, move.